Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
He inspires small business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need. And there's the challenge.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for joining us today. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. If you've been listening already, we really appreciate that very much. Kenneth Croson is our guest, ladies and gentlemen, and I'll remind you that some those of you who've been reading the things that I write over the last several years will remember that name. If you didn't remember the times that he's been on the show before, you'll remember the name because you know that I've made a big deal out of some of the research, some of the work that Kenneth has done along the lines of intellectual property and pointing out to us how the way we manage our assets these days, how it's different. And those of you who have heard me speak around the country have, you know, I rarely go talk very long without talking about this issue and referencing it back to a report that Kenneth did at one time. And I did that for a long time before I actually had met Kenneth. And then we finally found each other, and I've invited him to be on the show, which he has done in the past, and he's back with us today. Kenneth, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Jim. How are you?
We're doing great. It's good to have you back. And folks, Kenneth is a partner. He's an attorney. He's an intellectual property attorney. And he's with the law firm of Foley & Lardner in Washington, D.C. And Kenneth, I want you to know that I have a number of different speeches that I give to folks, but I almost always, even if they want me to do a speech in a certain angle for an industry, I almost always, I do my best, I strain at the opportunity to weave into my speech to them your work on intellectual property and how the mix of corporate assets have inverted from tangible and intangible to intangible and tangible over the last 30 years or so. And it's very important work that you pointed out. And to be honest with you, it was a watershed moment for me when I read that.
Well, you're right, Jim. There's been that tremendous shift. And in this country especially, I think it's become important where, you know, much of our manufacturing base has gone overseas. And what we now have are our ideas, and it's extremely important that we protect those ideas. And that gives us a competitive edge still to this day in the marketplace.
Well, and the essence of your work that I read, Kenneth, was that for most of the history of the marketplace, humans work to invent, create, produce, and sell stuff. All the while, they need to secure and to store that stuff, and to sell it, and ultimately, hopefully, but to store it and secure it until we deliver it. In the 21st century, we're doing the same things, but more and more of us are not doing it with tangible stuff, but with intangible stuff. And that's the points that you were making.
Right. And I'll tell you, it really sort of came home to me when I was over in Japan last month because the Japanese, who we think as being a country that manufactures tremendous amounts of goods and ships them around the world, they're now starting to suffer the same fate in that a lot of their manufacturing base is going over to China and other Southeast Asian countries. So they are starting to recognize, too, that the intellectual property rights that they can maintain are extremely important to protect their competitive position in the world.
Have they been guilty of playing fast and loose with other people's intellectual property rights over the years, Japan?
Well, it's interesting. In the early days, they were, and now that things have started to change on them, they have taken a much more aggressive position with respect to their intellectual property. In days past, they would ignore intellectual property rights, and it's kind of like what the Chinese have been accused of doing in recent times, where they can manufacture goods cheaply, and they can disregard other people's intellectual property. well. In early days, the Japanese were like that. Now things have really changed around for them. So it's a recognition, really, that intellectual property rights are extremely important.
Well, and we've got to have more and more countries like Japan. And this whole attitude of not being the Wild Wild West in the marketplace, has we've got to get that concept, that idea migrating and fixed in the minds of more and more people in the marketplace. And one of the things that I want to talk about, and we're going to be going to a break in a few seconds, Kath, when we come back, though, one of the things I want to talk about is the whole idea of how much is the United States and our developed country allies, our trading partners, how much are we in danger? How much of our economy is in danger from actual, you know, being ripped off by countries like China? Some people say it's a very, very serious threat, and I want you to talk about that when we come back after these messages. Kenneth Croson is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. He's an attorney and a partner at Foley & Lardner in Washington, D.C. I'm Jim Blassingame. It's 20 till. We'll be right back. It's 12:17 till the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Kenneth Croson is our guest, and he's an intellectual property attorney, one of the two intellectual property attorneys in our Brain Trust, and we're very proud to have him as a member of our Brain Trust. And Kenneth, we were just talking about what I was saying is before we went to the break, was that some people say that we're much more in danger from China, from them ripping off our intellectual property, than we are from any kind of a war threat, a military threat, or any kind of a physical threat. What do you think?
Well, I think there's a lot to that, Jim. I've been pretty heavily involved in IP affairs, interfacing between China and the U.S. In the last couple of years. And here's the problem. The Chinese have on their books very good intellectual property laws. They've only had them for about 20 years now. But the laws as written are good. The problem really is in enforcing the laws. And you hear a lot of gripes from our government, from Congress, from the Patent Office, from the U.S. Trade Representative's Office, and so on, about the fact that the Chinese just are not enforcing the laws that they have. So I think that as long as the U.S. continues to keep the pressure up, and other countries as well continue to keep the pressure up, that's going to change. At some point, the Chinese are going to, I think, realize that it's in their best economic self-interest to sort of get on board with everybody else and enforce their intellectual property laws so that you don't have the kinds of rip-offs that we hear about every day in the press.
It's a little bit of a rude awakening for Westerners to understand when they find out for the first time, Ken, it seems to me, that people on the other part of, in the other part of the world, many countries, don't have the same sense of ethics as we do. And it's not even that the people who I'm talking about, they don't really think they're doing anything wrong, and it's not that they're trying to intentionally steal things. They just think, you know, it's what, you know, if it's there, I can go get it. And if there's a different sense of ethics, isn't there?
That's exactly right. It's a cultural thing. You have to keep in mind that the patent and copyright laws in the United States are in the Constitution of the United States. They have been there from the very beginning, and even before that, people in this country recognized that protecting intellectual property was something that was just part of our soul, part of our being. You know, we recognized that it was important, but you know, you go to some of these other countries where you don't have that same kind of cultural heritage, and it doesn't mean anything to them. You know, what's important to them are other things. It may be economic survival. It may be how to best deal with their neighbors or their competitors
or the government.
They just don't. Yeah, or the government. They just don't have that same kind of ethical grounding that we do.
Well, even more than intellectual property, you know, our birthright as Americans, we feel that we have the right to own property and to protect that property, whether it's intellectual or not. And that's not even part of a lot of folks in undeveloped countries. They don't even have that. But one of the things I want to ask you is, talk to us about what all that means to small businesses, to America's small businesses. What do you think we should know that we should be paying attention to as we do business, not only, you know, in the United States, but also thinking about doing business overseas?
Well, that's a broad question, Jim, and I can give you a couple of my thoughts on it. First of all, I think that it's very important for small businesses to recognize that their intellectual property rights may be critical to their survival, that they need to protect them. They can't give them away. They have to have the proper kinds of agreements. You know, one of the problems that we have in this country is that somebody goes to work for a small company and sort of gets the family jewels, and then the next day they're out the door working for somebody else or setting up their own shop.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important for companies to understand that when they bring in people that are going to be in the positions of creating intellectual property, the technology people, what have you, computer people, that they have to have the proper kinds of agreements in place that mm-hmm. they at least have a fighting chance to prevent that kind of theft. I think that small companies need to realize that the government understands their issues, and that it's important for these small companies to be supportive of the organizations, be it government organizations within the government or trade associations or whatever it is, to help them get what they need, even if they can't do it alone. If they band together, they will be able to ultimately get what they need to be to remain competitive.
Well, well said, Kenneth. And one of the things that we've been trying to do on this show for a long time now is just to get small business owners to recognize that they have intellectual property, that it has value, and it needs to be protected. A lot of small businesses don't even get to that point.
Well, that's right. It's an unfortunate thing, and as you know, we were talking before. As our country shifts from a manufacturing economy to a service economy, intellectual property is one of the things that we have to maintain our competitive edge. And so, as that happens, we've just got to keep on enforcing and creating those rights.
Kenneth Croson, stand by. We're going to take a quick break, folks. We'll be right back with Ken. When we come back, I'm going to ask Ken, what's in a name? This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Kenneth Croson is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. Ken Croson is an attorney with Foley & Lardner. It's an outstanding law firm there in Washington, D.C. Ken, you want to tell us a little bit about your firm?
We are one of the large national firms. We have about 1,000 lawyers. I think it's about 16 offices around the country now, and we've got a couple of overseas offices, one in Tokyo, one in Brussels. And we have a very large intellectual property practice, and it's a general practice firm with an intellectual property group, and we're one of the oldest firms in the country going back into the middle 1800s.
Wow. Congratulations. That makes my 8 years in business seem small, but anyway, congratulations on that. And Ken, I wanted to, by the way, do you have a website you want to give us?
Sure. It's www.foley.com.
F-O-L-E-Y. Ken, when's your book coming out?
Well, I'm working on it now, Jim, and it's going to relate to the issue of protecting intellectual property assets, a topic that you and I have talked about before.
Well, I hope you'll let me launch it on my show when it's ready to go.
Okay, I'd be glad to.
You got an invitation right now to launch. We've launched a lot of books on the show, and I hope you'll do that. We're looking forward to seeing it. Ken, I told the audience when we came back I was going to ask you what's in a name. In the Wall Street Journal yesterday, there was an article about a guy who opened up a bar, a nice upscale bar in middle America, flyover America. I've forgotten exactly where. I think maybe in one of the Carolinas. And he named the bar Hemingway's. And he says he named it after a dog. He had a dog named Hemingway when he was a kid, and he named his bar after the dog. Well, the Hemingway family, the Ernest Hemingway family, are now suing him because they say that's an infringement of their name. What do you think?
Well, that's an interesting issue, and one that is actually within the scope of the trademark statute. You know, if you are in effect palming off or making it seem like in some way that you're associated with someone who is a celebrity or famous, that can get you into hot water under our trademark laws.
When he obviously has no claim to the name, it's not his name. If it were his name, I suppose he could use that.
That's right. If it's his own name, he can open up a bar. But you know, even there, you know, you start getting in trouble. You know, you've heard about these stories of somebody named McDonald who wants to open
right.
up a restaurant called McDonald's, and
right.
Of course,
that'll get you
visited.
That'll get you
yep.
visited by a few attorneys. Ken, there's another thing going on right now. Entrepreneur Magazine is that whole entrepreneur organization. Is trying to protect the word entrepreneur, the name entrepreneur, to prevent me from calling this the entrepreneur's hour, for example, if I wanted to do that. I know some people there in litigation against on that issue. What do you think about that? What I consider to be a public domain word.
Well, I think that they've got a tough row to hoe there because it's. It's okay if you use a publicly available word. It's only if you in some way use that word that might be confusing with what they are, with their business, with their publication. So if you were to in some way say that you're associated with Entrepreneur Magazine, that's a problem. On the
right.
other hand, entrepreneur is that word is available to anybody to use.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially if they use it in combination with something else other than, say, a magazine. Ken, we got about a minute. Look into your crystal ball and give us a little quick tour of where you think we're going to be from an intellectual property journey standpoint over the next few years. What do you think?
Well, I'll tell you, Jim, it's been interesting. The last couple of years, the number of patent applications in the United States has gone up exponentially. I don't see any stop to that, so I think that people with ideas are still going to be interested in protecting those ideas, patenting those ideas. The same thing with a design patent, same thing with trademark applications. So
mm-hmm.
I think that the trend will continue. I think that the world will definitely become more harmonized in the intellectual property arena. There's significant efforts underway now. I also think that the U.S. Intellectual property system, the patent system, is going to be streamlined in many ways to make it more competitive.
It needs to be more efficient. I know it's pretty inefficient right now. I know you'd agree with me when I say that every small business owner out there needs to have a relationship of some kind with an intellectual property attorney. You won't disagree with that, will you?
Not at all.
Hey, Ken, happy holidays. Thank you for being here, and we're looking forward to the next visit already.
Okay, thank you, Jim. Have a good holiday, too.
Yeah, Ken Croson, ladies and gentlemen, is his name, and he'll be back, I promise. I will be, too, but on the other side of the news, I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Stay with me. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.